The ports along the Levantine shore, stretching from Tripoli, which while a county was very closely associated with the Kingdom of Jerusalem, all the way down to Gaza today, these ports were very, very attractive. And would bring in European pilgrims, settlers, and merchants. All of them were supported by hinterlands in the northern sections by the Amanus Mountains, the mountains of Lebanon with their famous cedars, with coastal plains in what is called in Roman and medieval times Palestine. However, once you got into the interior of Jerusalem, it was a little more complicated. You got into the high hill countries of Judah and of Israel, the historic Hebrew kingdoms. There was the Valley of the Jordan, and then beyond the Jordan, in the regions which the Crusaders called Ultra Jordan, you got into that very mixed geography you have throughout the Levant. You see it in Syria today as well, of settled zones, oases, desert, a region that was dotted with villages. It had Bedouins. There was stock raising. There was different types of cereal production. But it would be difficult to control. It was also a region that had a far more mixed population. There were many more Muslims living in the Kingdom of Jerusalem, and there were also numerous Bedouins, Arab Muslims, who seasonally crossed the political frontiers. Nonetheless, all of these kingdoms offered great opportunities. The question was how to use them. I mentioned earlier that the Christians were a minority in all of this, and they couldn't assimilate the local population into their ranks. There are a number of individual conversions. On the other hand, they were not about to give up their own faith for the sake of the thrones they held. They were remarkably tolerant by the standards of the European day. The first generation of Crusaders very quickly learned to come to terms with this largely non-Catholic population. And to this extent, I credit the Normans and I credit the Provencials who had fought in Spain. They had been in contact with societies where there were other non-Catholic populations. Baldwin I, Baldwin II, both married Armenian wives. In Antioch, there were efforts to replace members of the Greek clergy, more because they might politically align with Constantinople rather than any kind of religious grounds. Native Christians were remarkably well tolerated by the standards of the age. And there were a number of cases in which common saints, common practices, and icons linked the Western Christians with their various co-religionists. Armenians could be recruited as soldiers, and in time, especially with Baldwin II, we find Christians even in the southern kingdom being sought out and trained as what are known as Turkopoles, which is a Byzantine term meaning mounted bowmen. These seems to be Syrian Christians. So there was a certain amount of contact. There was certainly intermarriage. Noble Armenian families were more than acceptable for intermarriage. Many marriages, I think, occurred between native Christians and the lower members of society. By the time of the Second Crusade, when you speak of the Crusaders, you're really speaking of a provincial Frankish race. There has been a fair amount of intermarriage between the Crusaders, both those who arrived immediately with the First Crusade and the immigrants who keep coming, and the native Christian population. And this is one reason why it's so difficult to count how many, quote-unquote, Crusaders there were. This was a number that was probably pretty difficult to calculate. Not only did it change from year to year, season to season even, with the rivals of pilgrims, immigrants, the constant fighting and battles, but also because of these marriages and extensions of families, and where do you draw the line? What is clear is that there was no massive conversion from Islam to Christianity. That just never happened. There were some remarkable individual conversions. And the Jews retained their position throughout the entire period, their position and their faith.